originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon. And once again, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. And very excited to do something a little different on this week's show as I bring you a special father-son edition of Trainer Talk. Now, Canadian Hall of Famer Mark Cassie has saddled more than 2,800 winners in his career, while his son Norman, who went out on his own after working with his dad in the spring of 2018, has already racked up 39 victories, including a win in last year's Grade 3 Regret Stakes at Churchill Downs. Norm will be with me in the second half of the show, but we begin with his father, Mark, who joined me, and many of you may have caught this interview, last Saturday morning on my Equine Forum program, and he expressed a little bit of uneasiness over the slow start to his 2020 season. So he responded in a fashion that only a Hall of Fame trainer could. He went out last Saturday and saddled 3 stakes winners at 3 different racetracks. Pretty good response. And he is Mark Cassie. He is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Mark, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, so I guess you don't get mad, you just get even.
Well, you asked me, well, what do? Do you make changes? And I said, no, you just keep doing the same thing you always do. And it's just sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So it was a good day. It was a good day for the Cassies. It was nice to win the 3 stakes and very excited for Norman and very proud.
Yeah, he won the Colonel E.R. Bradley at the fairgrounds with Don't Blame Rocket. So, great day for the Cassies. And now that you've kind of racked up a multi-stake win day like this, does that kind of catapult you to bigger things up the road, do you think?
You know, you just play it day by day. But, you know, it definitely, we came out of it. We maybe put ourselves, I kind of felt all along we were in the Derby picture, but I think maybe after Saturday, maybe a few more people might think the same. So that's always nice. You know, that's what we're always trying to do is have Derby horses. And it was nice to get March the Arch back. I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with this year in the older turf division.
Yeah, that was a big win, and it was a big win in the LeCompte, the race you're referring to with Enforceable. And, you know, when I asked you about Enforceable on the Saturday morning program, this is what you had to say, and I'll play the clip, and then we'll talk about this afterwards.
He's a horse we liked a lot, but he has just been extremely slow to come around. His last race was much better than it looks on paper, and David's extremely happy with the way he's trained up to this race, so... you know, we're expecting big things out of him today. If we don't see him today, then he's just not, I don't think he's good enough. So, we're looking for big things out of him today.
Did you see what you needed to see from him on Saturday, Mark?
Oh, yeah, maybe even more. It's kind of what, you know, this is a horse that was pretty high on our radar from the time we started breezing him as a young 2-year-old. But he just never got his act together. But I thought his race was extremely impressive the other day. It's not easy for a horse to make a big wide run, go around everybody, and keep on going. And the good news, too, for Enforceable and for Mr. Oxley and our team is that I don't think they ride him long enough. He should be able to go all day.
Yeah, that was a huge race. And you mentioned him being a little slow to come around. He obviously put it all together in the LeCompte. How about mentally? Do you start to see him turn a corner mentally when he has a performance like that?
I mean, it's just so important. And again, I think he is he's kind of one of our poster child kids, because we like running him, we like getting races into him. He reminds me a lot of Sir Winston, and these are the things. This is what we're going to need down the road if you're going to make it the first Saturday in May and be competitive.
What's that saying that we hear all the time? Why run two when one will do? you scratch Lynn's map, who was probably more highly regarded of the two. You're going to wait for Friday's Southwest or Smarty Jones Stakes with him at Oaklawn. Why run two when one will do? It proved fruitful, and now you look toward this race on Friday with the talented Lynn's map.
Well, yeah, that I would never, you know, they're owned by two different people, so I would never have done that, you know, just to have one horse avoid the other horse. But the reason I scratched him, Mike, was purely because of the post position. And we had the luxury of entering Friday the day before the LeCompte and able to see the field. And to me, it was, you know, at that time, it was a no-brainer. 9-horse field, we were in the 8 post versus 14. The only way I was going to run in the LeCompte was there was 4 or 5 scratches. I know War of Will actually won the Risen Star from the 14 hole, but there's very few horses that can do that.
Yeah, it would take a special horse for sure, and War of Will certainly proved to be. We talked about it on the show Saturday morning, but War of Will is looking toward a 2020 campaign. That has to be exciting too.
It is. He trained great. I'm back in at the training center this morning. I was in South Florida all weekend, and War of Will trained extremely well this morning, as did Got Stormy Breeze this morning. She had her final big work before the Endeavor. She'll have one more easy work, but today was a big work for her, and she runs at Tampa in the Endeavor.
Yeah, that would be great to, you know, see her get back on track. I mean, that campaign that she had last year, you know, you've trained good fillies before, Mark, and fillies that have had campaigns that have found them successful against the boys. But that campaign last year was pretty impressive, wasn't it?
You know, I thought it was.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I kind of feel like she doesn't get the recognition she deserves, even after winning the 4-star Dave, which she did something that no filly had ever done. She didn't just do it. She demolished them, and she broke the track record by nearly a second. I don't know. She just didn't get the recognition. I don't know why. She is an exceptional, exceptional filly. I was telling somebody yesterday, and it's the key, I think, also with these classic horses. And I'm kind of glad that Lynn's map's going to Oaklawn. He'll learn a lot about not just the ship, but a new racetrack and those kind of things, because they're important. They're going to be very important down the road if he ends up being a classic type horse. You know, we run at Churchill, we run at Pimlico. There's a lot of moving around, and horses need to learn to do that. Got Stormy right now, if they pulled the van and opened it up, you could just let her out of her stall. She'd go get in the van and say, where are we going next?
That's a great point. When sports teams, in particular an NFL team, is going to go into a loud environment, they'll often practice with crowd noise throughout the week to get used to it. They'll pump that crowd noise in. When a young horse, a 3-year-old, makes it to Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May, they face an atmosphere and a noise level that they've never experienced before. Are there things, Mark, that a trainer can do, anything in the months leading up to it, that you can do to get them ready for that experience?
I think, honestly, Mike, if you're talking about the month before, you've already waited too long. This is something they learn by running and experience. And that's why until what Justify, I don't think you'd ever seen a Derby winner not run at two. And there's a reason for that. And it's not all just about running. It's about everything. And Justify was just that good that he was able to do it. So those are things they learn, you know, by running in big races. You talk about a big crowd. You go to Oaklawn for the Arkansas Derby. Go to, Keeneland for the Bluegrass. So those are things you learn along the way. Some of these horses have been to the Breeders' Cup. But it's also the travel part, going different places, traveling. And being able to do that. A lot of horses end up, you'll never see truly how talented they are because they can't handle that kind of stuff. So it's not just ability or how fast a horse is or it's their ability to adapt and to do things. The other thing that has helped horses like the Got Stormies, the Teppans, the World Approvals, is they are able to adapt in the race. Now, if we talk about Enforceable, Enforceable is, he's a little more, he needs pace. He just isn't real quick early. So that's a bit of a concern. He could end up getting beat in a race or two simply because it doesn't set up for him as well. And so that's something that's always a concern. The good news is normally in the Kentucky Derby, they have plenty of pace. So. But that's the only thing that would be Enforceable's little weakness, I would say.
Visiting with trainer Mark Cassie on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. His son, Norm, will join me in the second half of the program. Mark, the last time you were on this particular show, Trainer Talk, was February 14th of 2018. And since that time, you've accomplished some pretty great things in the sport. Is that your birthday? You're a Valentine baby?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm so sweet. That's what I tell my wife.
Boy, you've got every line in the book. As a matter of fact, you actually used the line with me when I congratulated you on the big day this past Saturday. You said I was good luck, and very few people have ever told me that in my life.
I told you you were good luck. Did I tell you the black cat story?
You did not.
Okay, so a few years back at Santa Anita, a black cat ran across my path, and I was like, I don't know if that's good luck or bad luck. And then we went on and we won the Breeders' Cup. So I said, well, it must be good luck. And the other day I was walking somewhere and all at once this black cat ran right in front of, past me. And I was like, that was on Saturday. And I was like, oh boy, is that good or bad? Well, I've come to the conclusion it's good. In fact, I'm going out to get a black cat.
Yeah, you might want to get a couple of them. One for every track that you're racing at.
That's a plan.
Yeah, it's a pretty great story. It's like carrying around 50s at the racetrack. They say if you have 50s in your wallet, it's bad luck. I don't know if I've ever had a losing day when I've had 50s in my wallet.
Well, you know what I love? A lot of people say, well, I don't like being the favorite. It's bad luck. I said, you give me I'll be the favorite every time. I don't care. Just give it to me. I'll take the bad luck that comes along with it. Because if you're the favorite, the good luck will be more than the bad.
Are you superstitious?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I knock on wood 20 times a day. So
you and Nick Zito.
But, I'm sorry?
I said you and Nick Zito. He's always knocking on wood.
Okay. Yeah. But, I am a little bit, for sure.
So since that time, your birthday in 2018, things have really just, you were skyrocketing before, but you look at what you've accomplished, especially last year, winning the Preakness, winning the Belmont with two different horses. Take me back to your campaign in 2019, and when you think back to that year, last year, what are some of the things that, come to mind when you think about everything you were able to accomplish?
Well, obviously, you know, to win the Preakness after all the turmoil of the Derby was just, you know, just a great thing. It was unbelievable, and a lot of people wanted to say, well, it was redemption and this and that, but that's not the case. It was just, I was just so happy for the horse. And then the Belmont, you know, with Sir Winston. Sir Winston was doing so well, and Sir Winston was very rewarding for our team because he's, you know, he didn't start out great. He had a lot of, you know, his first two times he ran like 30 buyers. But we never gave up on Sir Winston, and he got better and better. And for him to win the Belmont was bittersweet for me. It was like you have your two kids and your one son goes out and achieves greatness, and your other son is there and you know, he's hurt. His feelings are hurt, and he didn't do as well. So, I mean, I was so proud of Sir Winston, and for the farmers, you won't find a nicer couple than the farmers. And I got the farmers because of Mr. Oxley, and he's the one that recommended to me. So that was rewarding, but that was nice. I guess it was a strange year. We had a lot of good things happen. I was a little disappointed. I really thought God Stormy could win the Breeders' Cup. That would have been, I was proud of her. Second's not bad, but I went into the Breeders' Cup thinking pretty confident. So that was a little disappointing, but you know what? We had a great year, and I'm going to try to do it again. I was talking to Mr. Oxley yesterday, and he said, Mark, you won the Preakness and the Belmont last year. He said, can you win the Derby for me this year? So I said, we're going to try really hard, Mr. Oxley.
Yeah, no pressure. He's not asking for too much, is he?
He's done it once already. I haven't.
You know, you had to wait a long time for your first Breeders' Cup victory, and then all of a sudden, it seems like every year now, you're just rattling off Breeders' Cup victories. Maybe like this with the Triple Crown races too. You had to wait a long time for that first Classic, and you get the Preakness, you get the Belmont 3 weeks later.
Yeah, well, the key to all that is you know, because I have such, you know, great owners, super owners, they're now giving us, you know, more ammunition and more candidates and. So that's nice, and I would say with our ability to go ahead and win the two classics, now I think we probably have gotten more young horses. We have an extremely strong bunch of young horses this year, just turned two. And so, the more you win, the more people have faith in you, and hopefully it just snowballs and continues.
You know, the last few years, you've been on the ballot to get into the American Hall of Fame. I mentioned you're already in the Canadian Hall of Fame. And you haven't gotten in yet, but now you come back with the two classics. Maybe that's enough to push voters over the edge and get you in the Hall of Fame here in Saratoga. Is that something that's kind of been almost like a motivational thing for you?
For sure. You know, and looking back, does it hurt when you don't get in? Yeah, it does. You know, is it disappointing? Yeah, of course it is. I've always said, though, and anybody that knows me, I don't want something that I don't deserve. So, and maybe with not getting in a few years, maybe it'll, when it actually does happen, I hope it does happen at some point in time, maybe it'll be even that much more special. So we'll see. We'll see what the voters think. You know, it is the Hall of Fame, and you're supposed to, only the best of the best are supposed to be in there. So, you know, if I do get in there, then maybe, you know, it'll have more meaning. I don't know when the last time they put a trainer in. And so we're Wayne Lucas, he made me feel really good. One day we were up at Saratoga, and I said, "Did you go to the gala last night?" He goes, "No, I went to bed." I said, "Oh, I went." I said, "But you're in the Hall of Fame, and I'm not." And he said, "No, but that's right around the corner." So that made me feel good.
Yeah, you've come a long way since the Great Barrington Fair.
That's for sure.
People don't realize that's where you saddled your first winner.
Right, it was. And I see where they are talking about bringing it back. I may have to take something there and try it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
For my dad.
It would be
for
great.
My dad, I mean, I'd have to do that for my dad.
Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine going back and winning a race again at the Great Barrington Fair all these years later?
That would be. My dad is, you know, my dad was, I owe everything I have to my dad. And I thought the one way, what was the best way to honor him, and you're going to be talking to him in just a little bit.
Yeah, Norman, coming up in the second half of the show. You mentioned how proud you are of him and everything he's accomplished. What makes you so proud about Norman when you see what he's doing?
Well, first and foremost, Norman is an intelligent, classy young man. And, you know, so everything he's ever done, he's always made me proud of him. He's always, you know, whether it was, he was a pretty darn good baseball player. People don't know that.
Yeah.
He was just had a little, his issue was his height, which he can thank me for. And his mom, not very tall. If he was tall, if he was taller, who knows how good a baseball player he would have been. But, you know, I've always been proud of him. And I think that he's done a great job. You know, he knows how to train a really good horse. But those things, that comes. People don't give you good horses. You have to, they start out young and you make them good. You know, you don't make them good, but I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but so that'll come for him. But so what he's doing though now is he's went out and claimed some horses, and he's done a great job with that, just showing you know what he's able to do. And as he continues to get more success doing that, then he'll start getting younger horses. And Norman knows how to develop a horse, and that's what I was looking for. Most good horses are developed, and he knows how to do that. He's been around a lot of good horses that we developed over the years. I mean, I can tell you this without a doubt, Teppan wouldn't have been Teppan without Norman. Norman did a tremendous job. I probably get more credit for Teppan than I deserve because Norman was more part of Teppan than me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how much of yourself you see in him, not just as a person, but as a trainer and his approach and the way he handles his business. How much of Mark Cassie are you seeing in your son?
Well, I think I see the same thing in Norman that, you know, my dad taught me, and that is hard work. And I would, you know, in the end, when it's all over, doesn't really matter how many horses you train, how good you do. It's, you want everybody to say that he was a good person, and Norman's a good person. And so to me, that's more important than anything. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of all my children that have been, you know, that they don't have to be in the spotlights. They don't have to do that. They just have to be good people. And I'm fortunate. I have some wonderful, wonderful kids.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Talking with Mark Cassie here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Just a few minutes left, Mark. I'll have to get to a commercial break. As we mentioned, Norman is going to join me in the second half of the program for a full 30 minutes, so I'll get a chance to talk about his career and the start of his career and the things that he's learned and what he's looking forward to most over the coming years as he continues to build his business. But looking ahead to this year, we mentioned Lynn's map going on Friday in the Smarty Jones. You told me the other day that maybe the three-year-olds are a little bit light for you, but it looks like that could be turning around a little bit.
Well, I just didn't. Yeah, well, I think we have three or four really nice two-year-olds, which at this point in time, I mean, that's all you can hope for. We have a horse called, he's in on, I think it's Sunday, running at Sam Houston, that I'm really, he's a heck of a turf horse, a horse called Jack and Noah. So I was, when we were talking about that, I was just thinking right now, as far as classic, you know, for the classics, we've got,
yeah,
of course, we have Enforceable, Lynn's Map. Untitled, we have to see. I think I told you about Untitled.
Yep.
I worked him this weekend down at Palm Meadows. He worked extremely well. But so when you get past that, those are probably our three big guns for the for the classics. But we have a lot of young talent, a lot of young horses. I think we'll do some serious damage with our turf horses, and we have some nice three-year-old fillies too. Perfect Alibi, she's a grade one, multiple Saratoga stakes and a grade one winner, and really didn't run too bad in the Breeders' Cup. Mm-hmm. You know, she's coming back now, so we have a lot of young horses, and like I said to you, we probably have the most powerful, strong group of two-year-olds that we've ever had.
Yeah, the older horses looking strong with the Preakness winner, the Belmont winner coming back for a campaign here in 2020. Got Stormy, you mentioned, back in training and pointing for big things up the road. So could be a really fun year, Mark. And I know it started a little bit on the slow side, at least from your standpoint. But you come back, you win three stakes last weekend, and it looks like things are right back on track again for the Cassie Barn.
Well, yeah. Maybe you and I need to talk every week.
Well, let's see if we can keep the winning streak alive on Friday.
That sounds good.
All right, buddy. Good luck with the Black Cat, too. I hope you see another one.
Okay. All right. Be well.
All right. Thanks for joining me. Mark Cassie on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. You heard, if you're just joining me, he told a great story about a black cat crossing his path earlier in that interview. If you missed any portion, just head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Well, Mark was fun. You heard him talk about how proud he is of his son, Norm. Norm's going to be with me in the second half of the show, and I know that he's learned an awful lot from his dad. He credits his dad for a lot of his success, but he's making his own name now and doing things his own way, and he's doing it very, very well. Stay with me. Norm Cassie is next on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today the Phasic Tipton Gulfstream sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2020. The Woodbine Backstretch is equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track and a 7 furlong turf training track. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 18th, the Queen's Plate June 27th, Woodbine Mile Weekend September 19th and 20th, and the Patterson Canadian International, now a $1 million purse, on Sunday, October 19th. Visit woodbine.com/incentives for the full stake schedule and more information.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Gunrunner, the leading earner, best son, and heir to the Great Candy Ride. A 10-time graded stakes winner, including 6 grade ones, who retired with earnings of nearly $16 million. Gunrunner is now stamping his stock with quality foals that have lots of size, are great movers, and very athletic. The number one leading weanling freshman sire with first crop weanlings selling for up to $750,000, and the number one leading freshman sire at the recently concluded Keeneland January sale. Horse of the Year, Gunrunner, standing at Three Chimneys.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
3 furlongs from home, sailing solo, Factor This. Don't Blame Rock, it is 4 lengths. Back running in third position at the turn-in from midnight tea time. Mr. Misunderstood, Space Mountain, Parlor and Captivating Moon. They've straightened up in the Colonel Bradley. Factor This, dual sailing solo through three quarters in 110.60. And here's Don't Blame Rocket's run. Don't Blame Rocket picked off Factor This and sailing solo. Midnight tea time needs to lift. Space Mountain, Mr. Misunderstood in just a grinding run, but well inside the final 16th with Julian Leperoux. Don't Blame Rocket. Don't Blame Rocket to win the Colonel Bradley by 4. Midnight tea time second. Factor This from Captivating Moon ran on with Late Energy, then Space Mountain from Sailing Solo, Parlor, and Mr. Misunderstood.
Nobody close to Don't Blame Rocket in that Colonel E.R. Bradley at the fairgrounds last weekend, trained by our next guest, Norm Cassie, the son of Mark Cassie. You heard Mark in the first half of the program. Want to do welcome everybody back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, Mike Penna in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, and happy to have you back with me. Don't forget, if you did miss any of that interview with Mark in the first half of the show or any of our Trainer Talk shows, it's pretty simple. Head back to our website at horseracingradio.net or go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and you can listen to all of our shows at your leisure. But yeah, what a performance that was. That was John Dooley with the call of that E.R. Bradley. And Norm Cassie is with me now. And Norm, I didn't think you'd mind me starting the interview with that particular stretch call.
Actually, I'm glad you did, Mike, because I haven't heard it yet. That's the first time that I heard it. I watched the race live. I was, I was excited then. I'm excited now. So that was nice to hear that today.
Yeah, I mean, the horse ran great. When you think about, now that you've heard it and you've had a couple of days to digest that performance, share your thoughts on that effort for me.
Honestly, I've had a lot of people call and ask and say if we expected it, and I'd be lying if I said no. I really, really thought that he'd run well, to be honest, because he had been down at Gulfstream at our Palmetto's base. And because he can work on the turf course, he's been thriving since he got down here this winter. And every work that he's had has been better than his last. And we went over to the fairgrounds a couple days before, just full of confidence. The horse was confident. Julian was confident in the horse. And he rewarded our confidence.
Yeah, Julian is so good. I think he's one of the more underrated riders in the game, and I know you've had success with him. I know your dad has had success with him in the past. What makes him so good?
With me in particular, I'll speak for my horses. I train my horses to be aggressive. I like them to be in the bridle, and I hopefully show speed, put them in races where they'll be sitting close. Julian is a guy, he really matches up with horses that are trained that way, because they'll be really headstrong. They'll be really ranked when you train them that way. But Julian gets them to relax just enough to be really, really effective. So Julian, when he's on a speed horse, is really dangerous. And he's got this stigma on him that he's, you know, he takes horses back and stuff. A lot of those horses are just trained to do that, and it's really out of his hands. When he's riding for an outfit like mine, he's just much more effective.
I know you can't get Julian on all of your horses. He'll have other commitments, and you know you use multiple jockeys. But when you're trying to find a jockey to ride a particular horse, do you try to get a jockey that you think will fit that horse, or you just say, hey, give me the best available?
It's just circumstantial, Mike, really. Yeah. I like you said, most of my horses I've trained, if you get your two-year-olds in and you train them, you know, you get to start from scratch, so to speak, and you train them and train them a certain way. I would certainly love Julian to ride the majority of them because, like we just talked about, he fits that mold with those horses. But then you have horses that are a little bit on the lazy side or, you know, don't want to show early speed that you maybe inherited or you claimed or whatever, and then I certainly have to look elsewhere for different riders because Julian obviously doesn't suit every rider and it's my or every horse, and it's my responsibility or my job to maximize a horse's potential, and a lot of that is figuring out the riders to use that suit that horse best. So although that me and Julian are a really good tag team together, I mean, obviously we do have to make exceptions from time to time.
You said you like to train your horses to be in the bridle. Why did you decide to take that approach when you started training?
I just think it's the easiest way to win a race. I like horses that show speed. Most of the time you'll get a nice ground-saving trip. Probably more importantly than that, I think it exposes your horses. I think if your horse is sitting second or third, and you're sitting right alongside an average or modest pace, nothing too serious, and your horse cannot win from that position, you're in the wrong race. And I think it exposes your horse and you can be realistic. On the other side of that, if it wins the race and it wins going away, I feel like you get a little bit more fitness out of that race and it sets you up for a bigger race next time you run. So every time we run, every time we train, every day that we do something has purpose, and you know, even if that means losing a race, we learn something about our horse. I just like having that type of trip and having those type of horses training that way because feel like we learn more about our horses that way.
Talking with Norm Cassie here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Norm, you went out on your own in the spring of 2018. Since that time, you've saddled 39 winners. You have a Graded Stakes victory to your credit with the Grade 3 Regret Stakes at Churchill Downs last year. So things have gone pretty well. But when you look back on this journey and what you've been through so far, share your thoughts. What has it been like for you being the guy?
You know, Mike, it's kind of hard. There's a lot of things that I think about. I think first and foremost, I'm proud. I'm proud of the work that we've put in, proud of the races we've won, the situations we've been fortunate enough to be in, the team that have came along with me, and the owners that support me. I'm proud of all that. I'm also proud to say that we've learned from our mistakes. I mean, we haven't done everything perfect. There's things that I wish that we could have done differently in hindsight. I feel like we're still behind the eight ball a little bit in some regards. But at the end of the day, I'm proud of the fact that we're winning at a high rate. We've won multiple stakes now. We're winning maiden races. We're winning allowance races. Those type of races that I want to be competitive at the highest level. And just really looking forward to where it goes from here.
Yeah, that's all part of the journey, Norm. Nobody's perfect. Everybody will make mistakes, and you just hope that you learn from them and move forward and become better from having made those mistakes, just like any athlete would do, for example. What would you do differently if you had to go back to the spring of 2018 and do it all over again?
Well, first and foremost, when I worked for Dad, I was really kind of like, I wanted to be the guy that was just in the barn. I didn't I got a lot of the limelight. I got a lot of the press and stuff. But at the end of the day, I wanted to be back at the barn. I didn't necessarily want to go and meet with owners and talk to them. And I really think that put me behind the eight ball a little bit, because I thought maybe my reputation from dealing with horses like Teppan and World Approval and Classic Empire would give me a little bit of an edge when I went out on my own. But at the end of the day, when it was there and we went on our own, the clients weren't there. I didn't have the support that I thought that I would have, and it was ended up just, crawling our way through it, putting together little partnerships. Now, I was lucky enough that, and I can't thank him and her enough, Mary Lou Whitney and her husband, John Hendrickson, really supported me when nobody else really wanted to. And, I'm going to be forever grateful for that relationship that I had with those guys, because they were really the first big ownership that supported me. But without them, I was really just putting together little partnerships, and we're lucky enough to get horses that nobody really wanted. And so, if I would have done things differently, I would have already had people lined up when I decided to make the move. So that was my first mistake. And then the second mistake, which probably, an owner would probably be grateful for when I say this, I probably could have kept horses around longer if I decided, to keep horses around. And I ended up, let's just put it this way, I have 20, 23, 24 horses right now. I could probably be sitting at 50 right now if I wasn't aggressive with my horses and really looking out for the ownership's financial well-being. But I don't do that. I don't believe in that. So I'm always struggling to get more and more horses, because the horses that I have, I maximize and get rid of as soon as I think they're not, worth the owner's time or money. And like I said, that can be seen in two different ways. It can be seen as a good thing, or in my case, I kind of like always feel like I'm always below the amount of horses that I always want.
Well, I know it hasn't been, all mistakes and all learning experiences. You've done some things right along the way too. So what would you look back on and say, I wouldn't change this. We did this pretty well.
I'm very, very, I guess probably the thing I'm most proud of is how well we've done with our claiming horses. The record stands for itself. And it's funny because that's not something that I was really used to working in Dad's operation, because I always got the really well-bred, well-meant two-year-olds or older horses that were just coming back that were meant to be stake horses, and we developed them in that way, and we were really successful at doing that, and I was proud of that. But I didn't really have a whole lot of horses that we claimed and developed into good horses, but we've done extremely well with our claimers, and I guess if anything, it's just a testament to the program. I bring them in, and we train them like they're good horses. I train them like they're Teppan or Classic Empire, and they respond that way. And so I'm most proud of what we've done with those type of horses, like Don't Blame Rocket or Do Share, or even the Conquest Windy City that I actually took back. That he was a horse that we had as a two-year-old when I was working for Dad, and we brought him back, and he ran a career-high buyer for us as an older horse. And so I've been most proud of that, because probably just because it rewards and kind of really shines a light of how good the program is.
How do you know that the horse that you're going to claim is the right horse?
I don't think you do. I think the way I look at it, to be honest, Mike, is we look at it as if it's the wrong horse. I always like to have an out. There's certain criteria for horses that I like to claim. And the first thing is that I look at is if this horse runs badly today, what are we going to do with the horse? If there's no, if the downside is too great, then we won't go. As many successes as we've had so far with claiming horses have certainly been bad ones too. So, but the bad ones have not broke us, because we were smart enough to claim horses that had a way out if they weren't good. So you don't, I don't know if that's the right way of looking at it, but it seems to be working for us.
How many horses do you have in your barn now, Norm?
We have 24, and those are all older horses that they're split among Fairgrounds and Gulfstream, and those are older horses that I believe will be coming home to Churchill and Kingland with me. This time last year, I probably had the same amount of horses, but by the time we went back up to Kingland, it was probably cut in half, and then it was a rebuilding phase. These are legit maiden allowance and stake horses that are left, and I imagine that will be right about that number once the babies come in.
What's the ultimate goal? Where would you like to be eventually?
My ultimate goal is I don't want to be a big giant outfit like my dad's. That's just too many horses. I would like to have like 70 horses, and it's a magic number for me because I want to be the guy in Kentucky. If you said what my ultimate goal would be, it would be I want to be the guy in Kentucky. So Kingland and Churchill, and I would love to have, you know, 35 horses at Kingland, 35 horses at Churchill. The Kingland barn would move around to Saratoga and other places when we had to. And then during the winter, we would split the two divisions up between Fairgrounds and Gulfstream. And really, you know, we'd have fun at Saratoga. We tried to win races, but the real focal point would be winning stake races and winning a lot of races in the state of Kentucky.
Well, and I think the money's going to be pretty good here too, isn't it?
Well, and honestly, we saw the writing on the wall about that, Mike. Like, that was one of the deciding factors when I went on my own. You could see where Churchill was headed, and you knew you needed to get in there. I'm very fortunate that I already have a barn at Churchill. A lot of guys are going to try to get in the Churchill that are going to be turned away. We're lucky enough to already be there because in the next 4 or 5 years, the climate there is going to change drastically.
You talk about wanting to be the guy here in Kentucky. Does that go back to your baseball days when you were kind of the guy at Bellarmine?
I was never. Let's debunk that. I was never the guy at Bellarmine. I was the guy down in the basement looking at the racing form in the library. That's what I was doing at Bellarmine. No, I'm from Louisville. My first memories of the racetrack were going to the races with my dad and my grandpa at Churchill Downs. A lot of people dislike Churchill for whatever reason. Churchill is my home. It's where I'm most proud to win. It hosts the race that I want to win worse than anything in the world. And, you know, no one can ever convince me otherwise. So long-term goal would to be that guy at Churchill Downs, who's one of the leading. I think that's a realistic goal, and I look forward to trying to achieve it.
Yeah, you talk about that one race, the Kentucky Derby is the one you're alluding to. I think any trainer that gets started, and I can tell you this from doing this program now for more than 8 years, every trainer would say, okay, if I had to pick one, it's the Kentucky Derby. It's the one race you want to win. How do you get there, Norm? How do you build the operation from the claiming horses that you're working with now to getting to that level where you say, I'm a legit Kentucky Derby contender each and every year?
I'm going to tell you the same thing that I tell everybody. I use every day, every race, every moment as a building block to winning the Derby. So my handling of Teppan when I worked for Dad, I felt like, and listen, she's the complete opposite of a Derby horse. She's a miler on the grass and went overseas, right? But at the end of the day, she was a superstar horse that had the world's attention, that there was a lot of pressure, and we learned from her. So I take something from Teppan. I take something from Classic Empire. I take every race, win, lose, or draw, is making me a better trainer. And when we get to that moment where we have horses in the Kentucky Derby, those horses will have taught me what I need to know for me to develop that horse that gets me into the Derby. And I look at that with every single horse that I have.
visiting with trainer Norm Cassie here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Don't forget that this is Gunrunner Week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating the great Gunrunner all week long. You can head over to our website to learn more. Gunrunner Week, presented by our friends at Three Chimneys. Take me back to June 15th of last year at Churchill Downs. You mentioned your home track. You didn't win the Kentucky Derby, but you won the Grade 3 Regret, and that had to be extremely special.
Well, obviously for multiple reasons, but I think 50 years from now, when I'm retired and we're looking at all the memories that we've had and all the successes we've had and the trophies, to go back and know that we won our first stake race for Mary Lou Whitney, that's just going to be something I'm going to hold on to forever. Turned out to be the last race she ever got to win. And so, I don't know. I'm usually not lost for words. It's hard to describe what that one means, because it was just such a cool moment, and it was more than just a horse race.
Yeah. Do you have the picture somewhere in your office, in your house?
I have it. I have a really, Gabby and I, we just recently got a house. We got a really nice basement that's got a lot of cool things hanging up. A lot of cool memories, but that's kind of front and center right now. So like I said, it was Churchill, it was Julian, but more importantly, it was Mary Lou. And like I said, I alluded to earlier, wasn't for her and her husband, I don't know where we would be right now. So to do it for them was really special.
You know, I've spent a lot of time on this show and other shows talking about her legacy and what she meant, not just to Saratoga, but to the sport of thoroughbred racing. And, you know, people like Nick Zito, who was very, very close with her, he came on and was fantastic looking back on her life. Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union did the same thing. How about for you, Norm, when you think about the name Mary Lou Whitney, what does it mean for Norm Cassie?
Honestly, it's going to, I've already thought about it. Like when she's going to be the person to help make me. And I mean that. Like if it wasn't for her, then we honestly don't know where we would be. And that is a testament to what she does. And I guarantee you there's hundreds of people who can say that same thing. It wasn't like she just threw me a bone. She did this for a lot of people. And she was obviously very fortunate, and she passed her fortunes along. And that's when there's very few and far between people like that. And she was just special. And it was just when I only got to spend a few days with her. Like I got to meet her at her home. We went to the races one time together. We actually won a race and got to stand in the winner's circle together. So that was all great. But when you were around her, there was literally a presence about her. Like it was like, I guarantee you, it's the closest thing that we have to, like, royalty. And I mean that. So it was like, I'm just so proud that they felt comfortable sitting me horses. And I just thought that was a testament to, you know, our program and that they believe in us.
Moments ago, you mentioned Gabby's name. Gabby Cassie, but she's better known as Gabby Gaudette. And she's such an unbelievable talent. She's worked with us on several occasions, and you guys got married, and you mentioned now getting your house. What's it like to have somebody like Gabby by your side as you build your operation and your business, somebody who knows the game the way she does?
I'm just unfortunate. I think we're both very fortunate. I think we're two great people separate, but together we're fantastic. We hold each other accountable. She tells me when I'm doing something stupid. I tell her when she's doing something stupid.
Yeah, that's marriage. That's marriage, brother.
Well, but no, but it's like, but I get that that's marriage, and I agree with you 100% about that, but it's not, oh, you're doing something like today. It's not that. Norman, why would you run that horse in that spot? Like, that was stupid. Like, I value her opinion on horses probably more than anybody. So, like, if I'm debating where to run hard legs, you'll be one of the first person or first people that I'm going to run the options by. And she's kind of like my right-hand man when it comes to the stable. And that's invaluable. And then she's hosting the Eclipse Awards on Thursday night. Well, I'm helping write the script. Like, she's coming in and asking me what she thinks, you know, she's introducing the presenters for the Apprentice Awards. And she comes in and asks me my opinions on the script. So, like, we're one in the every, you know, she went up to Kingland. She was the first woman to ever go up and do the announcement for Kingland. I helped her do that. I feel good about that, and she's helped me. If it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't be on my own now. So, you know, I'd say this without trying to be too corny. If it wasn't for her, I know I'd be half the man that I am. So I mean that.
Yeah, it's got to be a team effort. There's no doubt about it. Back to the script for the Eclipse Awards for a minute. Did you give me a little extra love in there when she gets to my part? You deleted that part, didn't you?
Shoot me a text what you want it, what to be said, and I'll make sure it doesn't.
No, I want this to come from you. I want it to come from the heart.
I'm too scared to go up on stage. I'll make sure she says what you want her to say.
Norm Cassie with me here on Trainer Talk. Just a few minutes left, Norm. What does the future hold for the Norm Cassie operation? Where do you see yourself a year, two, 3 years up the road?
Just growing. I just think we got to keep our head down and keep winning races. I just always have to tell myself, no matter what happens, just keep winning races. People are going to continue to notice, and we'll get more and more opportunities. And we just got to be patient and realize that Rome wasn't built overnight. And hopefully 4 or 5 years from now, we're having a conversation and we're talking about Triple Crown prospects and Breeders' Cup prospects, and then that will turn into Triple Crown winning horses and Breeders' Cup winning horses, and that's obviously the goal. But for now, we'll just keep winning races and we'll keep building.
What's next for Don't Blame Rocket?
He's on his way home from the fairgrounds to Palmettos. We're going to continue to do the series at the fairgrounds, so he'll run the next two big days at the fairgrounds. You know, I kind of went back and forth whether I wanted to bring him back to our Palmettos base, but he just was so happy here, and he just trained so well over the turf course here that I just had to bring him back. And he was okay with shipping over there in his last race, so I feel comfortable that that's the right move. Hopefully he'll win those two races or run well. And then, you know, at that point, we'll maybe start shooting for the moon with him a little bit.
How about Hard Legacy? Is she back too?
She's back galloping. We're going to run her one time down at Gulfstream, probably in a three other than, and then hopefully find a stake for her at Kingland. She loves like running there, but really the whole focal point of our entire year, which most of the horses, is just basically running them once or twice while we're down here during the winter, and then really focusing at Churchill and Kingland, because that's the place that everybody wants to be, so we got to continue to make this happen.
Well, Norm, I can't thank you enough for spending a little time with me here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. Been great to catch up with you and hear your story, and let's go get it done. All the best moving forward, my friend.
Let's get it done. Talk to you anytime. Thank you.
All right. Norm Cassie here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig. Tipton, his dad, Mark Cassie, joined me in the first half of the show. It's a father-son edition as we celebrate Gunrunner Week. Yeah, here on HRN. I know that wasn't a Cassie horse, but Gunrunner was pretty good. That's all presented by our friends at Three Chimneys. And again, this show all presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.